Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the China Startup Pulse. My name is Todd Embley, your co-host, and the other co-host is...
Ryan Shukin. How's it going? Good to be here.
Yeah, doing well, doing well. Our guest today is probably one of the most active mentors that we've had at China Accelerator for quite a while.
Huge value add.
Yeah, amazing guy, great tech background, has a kind of a tech company, tech development, outsourcing, management strategy, and he does a lot of work on the higher end with a lot of brands building out their tech stuff, helping them even understand what building a WeChat app or subscription or service account is.
Yeah, he started it in 2003.
Yeah. So that's Stefan Monsalier. Yeah. Right? Stefan Monsalier, he started System in Motion, back in 2003, incorporated in 2004. He's been here in Shanghai for a very, very long time. Very, very active in the startup ecosystem. He's part of the entrepreneur organization, the EO, which is a global organization for, I think it's for startup, for founders that have had, like a million in revenue or something.
Yeah, he's always given back. And he does an amazing talk about time management.
Yes, the workshop he does during China Accelerator. It's amazing. Yeah.
And we have that. We have his thoughts and his perspective on why that's so important to an entrepreneur's life. I mean,
that's right.
You have so many things moving on, and he gives some really key advice.
Cut the fat.
Yeah, that means, that can affect your life, too.
He sits down with them all and says, get rid of half the things you think you're going to do during the next 3 months. By the end of it, that's what he does, and he gets them to get rid of it, which is great, and it helps me in my job, getting them to do the things I need them to do. We talk about, so he's been here a lot of time. We talk about a little bit about his thoughts on B2B sales. Is it different or not in China versus the West? Talent acquisition and retention.
We go over some quotes that we think were relevant in the news as well.
Yes, a little bit. It was some quotes from a few weeks ago, but some stuff that Paul Graham said that people are starting to wonder if he's maybe getting a little bit dated.
We got some. I mean, it's whether it's applicable in China, and so we bring it into focus for
China,
what
give
we
it
think.
The China color.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of good bombs of knowledge to be dropped here, and I'm really excited for this episode. So let's just get on into it.
All right, enjoy. Hey, everybody. So we're here with Stefan Monsalier on the China Startup Pulse. And as we usually do, a quick rundown of his background. So, Stefan, you're French.
Yes, I am.
You studied computer science in France.
Yes, I did.
You went through some corporate, had some fun, financial, banking institutions, climbing the corporate ladder. Now you're grimacing because I said had some fun.
Yeah.
Because probably wasn't
not too
so much fun.
No.
Yeah. And then you, as most of us did over here, you got the China bug. Yeah, so you came out, you chose Shanghai in 2003,
yes.
Right? You're looking for something to do, not sure what, and then you kind of stumbled upon the company that you have built over the last 12 years, System in Motion. So it kind of came around in 2003, you incorporated 2004. Can you tell us all a little bit about what System in Motion does?
System in Motion actually had two lives. First of all, when I came here in 2003, we started as an outsourcing company because salaries used to be lower here than they used to be in the US at that time. So there was a salary gap that we could take advantage of. That's disappeared slowly.
Yeah. It sure has.
And fortunately, we stumbled upon first customer in 2008. So there was a turning point for us to realize that there was a market here for software services, which probably didn't exist before. It was just really the beginning there. So 2008, we started to see companies here, foreign companies, looking for people they could trust and people who understand China, but also had a good background in project management and software services. And we've been growing that portfolio from then on to be more and more here in Shanghai, providing services for companies here. And we still love our outside of China customers, but it's getting more and more difficult for us to be relevant for them because, as you know, probably salaries have been increasing the cost of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, everything's gone
everything.
Up.
So we are still relevant here in China and we are less. So if my customers are listening outside of China, we'll still love you. We still love to service you, but we know we're going to lose you eventually.
Let me ask you a quick question. Are developers... Chinese developers now more expensive than foreign developers here?
They're more or less on par, I think.
That's amazing.
More or less on par. So we're talking about the average for a developer in America or in Europe, or are you talking about like Silicon Valley?
Probably not Silicon Valley.
Let's not talk about
what are
that
we talking
place?
About?
Well, I think we're talking average Europe in terms of salary, maybe still lowering costs because the social contribution are not that high yet.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So they are catching up.
Uh-huh. Right. And that's a big thing because it used to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
It used to be a lot cheaper, you know, even for Chinese developers here. And so, I mean, you're hiring today. Which do you
all
prefer? Yeah, I know. Who isn't? Oh, my gosh. I get pinged at least two or three times a day. Like, hey, do you know any, you know, developers?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, just happen to have a bunch sitting around not doing anything. Yeah, here you go.
I have 10 in the closet.
Yeah,
I'll get them out for you. And, yeah, and CTO. Do you have a CTO in your pocket right now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like 474th in line, buddy. Like,
yeah,
it's ridiculous right now.
Get your kids to start coding now.
Oh, man. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
They do. They learn it in school, and I think it's very small.
Yeah.
My son, who is 8-year-old, is learning to code right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's what Code Academy does, right?
Yeah. Scratch, code.org, this kind of stuff.
Code Academy. Coder Dojo. Thank you, Darren, from behind the glass, so to speak, hooking me up with that. Yeah, that's something, you know, SOSV and Billy Yao, one of our venture partners at SOSV, is very much behind. A huge thing.
Get your kids to code right now. They will never get hungry.
That's true. And so let me ask you a bit of a different question. So we haven't even got it. We're like so far off topic right now, but I just love this. So Dave McClure, right, 500 Startups guy. Mm-hmm. He was speaking at the SOSV Skydive reunion thing last May. By the way, it's coming up again this May. Just book your tickets.
Okay.
We just found out like 2 days ago that it was all set. One of the things he said was basically this. In his opinion, in the next year, design will basically become a commodity. What will become a commodity after that will be computer engineering. And coding will start to become a commodity as well. It just computer system will become so smart, they will be able to do all of the coding for you regardless. So he said, is my daughter learning how to code right now? He's got an 8-year-old daughter. Yes, she is. But what am I more interested in having her learn? Human behavior. Because, you know, understanding market forces, human behavior, buying patterns, you know, these kinds of things. This is where he felt the future was for the young people to know and be marketable, you know, in 10, 20 years. I don't know. You're a computer science guy, so I might be just speaking blasphemy to you right now.
No, you're not. So, I mean, first of all, learning how to code is also give you also a good insight in how computers are working, and not to be so much afraid of computers. And we still have to, some people still have to grasp that human-computer interaction. When you know how to code, like I do, like kids are learning to do, I think they interact with computers in a very different way, where you understand the insides and why it's working, why it's not working. So this is still useful, and it's still going to be useful when your car is going to drive itself. If it behaves like your phone today and you don't really understand what's happening, you're going to freak out. So this will still be useful even when computers start to code
math.
Themselves.
I mean, it's like you have to learn this from age. It should be, you know.
Now, about Mr. McClure, prediction for the future. Probably. Yeah, it sounds reasonable. I don't know if did he put a time frame on that? Is it like 10 years, 2020, right?
Like that. I mean, his daughter's 8, so he's like 10 years from now.
Yeah. Now, as a job market, what are companies looking for? I mean, most companies are 5 years, 10 years behind technology.
Yeah.
They're just trying to catch up.
Very true.
You know, if you think about China, most of companies I see, I won't name names, they are just setting up their WeChat account. So they are 2 years, 3 years behind.
Yeah.
So if you try to go too far away and being in the service market and you're trying to find customers with something that people don't understand yet, you are too early on that market. Versus being a bit late or having, you know, as they say in consulting, you just need to be one day ahead of your customer.
Right?
So probably a bit too futuristic. So for kids, we will get in the job market in 10, 15 years. I think it's still smart. Knowing about human interaction, yeah. I think you start in kindergarten when you have the cool kids and the uncool kids, and yeah. you want to be in their group. I mean, this is all part of the dynamic of being in society, trying
to sell your banana for the chocolate pudding, and you're figuring out
I could never manage that. No one wanted my apple and banana.
Yeah. Lemonade and cookies. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now you're one of the mentors at China Accelerator, mm-hmm. we should say that. And one of the interesting, I would say, workshops you do come in for a few hours is all around time, right? And I just was interested if you could talk a little bit about why you find this so important and something that entrepreneurs are typically really, really bad at. They overestimate maybe how much time they have or how many things they get done. Why is this such an important, thing for you? I mean, it's the one thing that, and you deliver the workshop brilliantly, and everybody hates you for it by the end of it. But talk a little bit about what you do and why you're doing that workshop.
I don't think entrepreneurs are bad at time management. I think everybody's bad at time management.
Sure. Okay. Yeah? Sure. Yeah.
It's not only them. I mean, it's worse in corporates, mm-hmm. because corporates have way more resources, way more people, way more time, mm-hmm. so they waste way much more.
Sure.
But for an entrepreneur, it's a crime. It's a crime because they have a vision, they have a passion, and they get sidetracked by many, many, many things. And because it's their project and their vision, they don't want to delegate too much. And I think they delegate late. So that's what we do in the workshop. We look at what is really, really important, at the value that only the founder or only the CTO or only the CMO can deliver. And I try to make them realize that they should concentrate on that, mm-hmm. and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of things they actually can stop doing and they will produce more value. So this is the point that is difficult to grasp, is to achieve less, to achieve more by doing less. And what do you need to stop? So it takes like 1.5 hours to get them through it. And the last half hour where I get them to sit down, look at their calendar and say, okay, what can you stop doing? So I don't do it straight away, but few steps.
Yeah.
They're a bit surprised, but usually most of the entrepreneur, with one or two exception, you always have one person to say, oh, no, I didn't do anything. Means they didn't really go into the workshop. But everybody else, they will say, yeah, sure. Oh, great idea. Do they put it into action? I don't know. But at least they have this as a reference point on how much more efficient they could be. Especially in China Accelerator, they only have 3 months. Uh-huh. If they spend 20% of those 3 months on the wrong things, they haven't created as much value as they should have.
For sure.
And their valuation is not as high as it should be. And it's bad for them, it's bad for the investors, it's bad for everybody.
Yeah, okay. I think we do that almost every weekly meeting, is we go through and talk about, okay, so what did we do last week? What were we working on? What were our wins and losses? Where are we at? These kind of things. And a lot of people, I did this and this, but I didn't get that done and that done. Why? Oh, well, then there I got invited to this event, and then, I had to go over and I had to do this, and then I did that. And most of the time you're just looking at them just like, why did you think that was even remotely important right now? It's like, well, you never know. Down the road, I think they might be one of our partners or, something. It's like, what? You don't even have a product. What are you doing?
Yeah. I've experienced that before. I know exactly what it feels like.
Oh, because you went through China Accelerator. Yeah.
And you get caught up in how much, because there's a lot to offer. There's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. just the being so excited about learning things can eat up all your time.
That's true.
And you could just want to be a part of everything, want to learn. And that could be something where the livelihood of what you're doing depends on you to focus on it. And if you lose sight of that and get too engrossed in the learning process without any balance.
Hmm. Yeah, the balance is the key thing. I think a week in the life of an entrepreneur has to be like a good cocktail, You have to have the good proportion between partying, the alcohol, and then the vitamins and the juice and everything and the sugar.
Yeah.
And every week should contain a good proportion of each of them. So the learning, yes, but if you spend all your time learning, you're not an entrepreneur, you're a student, you're in university, right?
Yeah.
If you don't learn anything, then yes, you're not going really anywhere. You have to deliver, you have to manage. If you're the founder, you have to manage your people. You say, oh, we're co-founders. Yeah, you still need to manage them. You are still the voice and you still need to make decision. You have to empower them, you have to delegate, but you still need to manage. So the trick, for example, is a good one is to use a calendar with color codes, and you look at your calendar. And if you see all red, whatever red means, whatever topic it is, it's not good. Too much yellow, whatever color you use, it should not be a single color. It should be a good mix of color. And if you do it regularly, week after week, you see how, even then you learn to see what's happening next week. Do I have that good balance in how much learning, socializing, networking, fundraising, managing, delivering value, development,
content, extra? PR, advertising, exercise.
So a good, exercise. Exercise, working out.
Balance.
So it's all about that balance, because there are many, many things to be done, and all those things need to run in parallel. You know, going back to a computer analogy, you all need to achieve them, but in the right proportion. Otherwise, it's a bad cocktail.
This is great, because we didn't even have to tell Stefan. We didn't even talk about before you got on here about like what the whole point of the podcast is really just trying to deliver advice and learning and things like this. Now, generally, we want to center it around China, but so often it's kind of applicable globally, right? It's like whether you're coming to China to do a startup or whether you're doing it somewhere else, you know, this stuff, it really is gold. And I hope people understand. I'll tell you what. We're going to jump into a quick early break just to get it out of the way, because I think this is just a good spot to do it. And then when we come back, I want to ask you about something that that Paul Graham recently said about focusing on building the better product or, you know, having better sales and which wins. All right. We'll talk about that when we come back. Hey everybody, Todd here. Just want to jump in and thank our sponsors very, very much for the support that they give to us and having our backs in trying to get this podcast going. And so far, so good. I think everybody's given us some really great feedback and it's done well. And in no small part to the backing of China Accelerator, you know, full transparency, I do work for China Accelerator. I am the program director. You know, everything that they have brought to the ecosystem that we have tried to bring to the ecosystem, I think has been very, very well received. And, you know, I think doing a lot to just promote and nurture the startup ecosystem, not just in Shanghai, but all around China and globally, as we get a lot of global companies coming through as well. And, you know, it's just, if you want to enter China, as we talked about, we even mentioned it in the show today, if you are thinking about coming to China, I think understanding how difficult China can be and joining forces with China Accelerator to launch your product in China is just something that we find is incredibly valuable and think it's very, very important. Now, we also want to thank PeopleSquared. We are a tenant, so to speak. We live and operate out of PeopleSquared, the Hero Space, which is their flagship operation and space here in the middle of Shanghai, right in downtown Jing'an. They think they have 9 spaces throughout Shanghai. I think they have over a dozen throughout China, one in Shenzhen, up in Beijing. They are the premier co-working space of China right now. And their dedication to community. I was talking with Jenny on the way out the door about all the new players that have come into the ecosystem here. And Jenny said, you know, we really got to hand it to the PeopleSquared people, because they have their office in PeopleSquared. And she said that it's just their commitment to being so helpful to startups and just working for the startups is just yet to be matched by any other co-working space in China. So kudos to PeopleSquared, my friend Bob Jung, who's the founder. We've had him on the show before. So big thanks to China Accelerator and PeopleSquared for their sponsorship. Really appreciate it. Hey everybody, welcome back. Talking with Stefan Masale, founder of System in Motion. And the one thing that I alluded to that we wanted to chat quickly about before we went to break was this thing that Paul Graham said, which kind of ignited just another Twitter fire out there with all kinds of people getting involved, with from the Dave McClure to Sam Altman and Y Combinator and all these guys. It was interesting. Because he said, really, you have to focus on building the best product. The best product always wins. And I think a lot of people took exception to that. you know, of course, Sam Altman went on defending it. And then a lot of other people on the other side was like, well, no, I mean, honestly, you know, it's best sales. Really, it's we've seen a ton of shitty products win in a market just because they knew how to sell. They knew how to get customers, and they knew how to, you know, it was rarely actually best product wins. In this case, now better product, yes. But trying to have the best product, trying to build the best product, is that something that an entrepreneur should care about?
It's a matter of definition. The best product, the perfect product, it doesn't exist. You know, it's a moving target, and especially especially nowadays, I mean, the environment is changing, and especially in China, if you want to, you know, concentrate more on China, you can have a very good product today, really on market, and then 6 months later, it's not relevant anymore. So if you spend all your time and energy in building that product, the time you release it to the market, it's already too late, or it's not. I mean, you're running after it, and you never catch your market. So, sales, yes, you need sales. You need them to go and find who are the customers. Do they like the product? When we run the Fail Faster workshop here with China Accelerator, it's always about what is the minimum viable product, which is a very interesting concept, which forces entrepreneurs to get back to what is the core value. And sometimes they miss it. The vision is interesting, and they need a vision. They need to visualize their customer. They need to talk to customers, so that's sales. And they need to bring it back to the product manager and say, this is okay, your product is really nice, but they don't like it. So if your definition of the best product, or his definition of the best product, is that the product you can sell without sales, then yes, yeah, sure, you don't need any sales. But if you don't have anybody to talk to your customers, and those people would be the sales, your product can never be a fit. It's just something you do in a vacuum, and you try to release to market, it doesn't meet the market, and you complain about it. So I don't see how you can get one without the other one, and vice versa.
I think that best product always gets beat by good product fit, market fit.
Yeah, of course.
Really?
Right? Yeah.
Always, or in like...
Well, I mean, there's some variables there. I mean, if you have an amazing sales team on the best product, and then not the best product market fit.
Let's just talk about China. I think you're right for China.
Let's not.
I think you're right for China when you talk about that. It's never about the absolute best solution to it. It's about the best executed.
You know what? On Facebook, that's funny. That's because my only comment was like underneath, like, Dave McClure and everybody who's writing comments, I wrote, well, Paul's obviously never been to Asia.
Well, nothing to... Yeah, it's just the best executed approach because, oh man, there's
but
so
it's
many...
But speed to market.
So many,
it's yeah, speed to
it's
market.
Flexibilities.
And the speed to market gets you some users. And once you've got some users, you can fucking talk to them. And if you can start talking to them about something, then you can start shaping and molding it into what they want. But if you're doing it blindly without having talked to them, you're taking a real fucking risk that it's not something that the customers really want, or even worse, will pay for.
So again, that quote you mentioned, it takes a very static view on, okay, this is the best product for now and forever. But this is not true.
It's
not. I mean, what are the best product? What were the best products before the smartphone came in? We don't even remember what were we using before, right? Was it a laptop? Was it a bicycle? I mean, it doesn't mean anything. Once you get mobility, once you get smartphones, once we get virtual reality or whatever, the best product will be something completely different. So the ability as a company, as a startup, to reinvent yourself and follow or maybe precede the market and see what customers want. Yeah, you need customers. You need people to talk to. You need people to send you feedback, good and bad. And the bad feedback is always more useful than the good one. So no, I don't really like that quote. With all due respect to Mr. Graham.
And I think a lot of people felt the same way. You know, again... unfortunately, for all the stuff coming out of Paul Graham and Sam Altman's, you know, mouths or pen or keyboards, it's all directed back to trying to position Y Combinator and defend off everybody else. This is their sole purpose in life, is to try and separate Y Combinator from everybody else, instead of, you know, giving good advice, in my opinion, or doing the right thing for the ecosystem. They're simply self-serving with regards to Y Combinator. And well, I just hope that a lot of people listen to what they say. They've done a lot of really good things and you know, put a lot of investable, really great products and companies out there. There's absolutely no question. And all their series on startups and on all the educational materials they put out, amazing stuff, really. But just
a lot of inspirational work out there.
Yeah, the social media stuff though, and the things that they say sometimes though, is just really disturbing. Not that great. So let's go back. Let's talk about the dev side, because you know, this is a lot of what you guys do. Developing now, when you've got something and you come to China, and I only bring this up because, how can I get you to answer this question without like totally leading into it? But you know, somebody wants to do something. What are the steps? You've got like WeChat accounts and WeChat apps and native apps and websites and optimized for mobile and all these different things. And I kind of just have this theory of what it's like in the West and how it's a little bit different over here. But I mean, what are your thoughts? Where do you start with dev?
What do you mean for a company coming to China? Or?
Yeah. You're going to start something in China. You're going to start a tech company in China. Pretty general, I know, ambiguous question, you know, without, but you know, you want to start getting involved with tech, but where do you start? You know, where do you put your one or maybe two deck guys to work on at the very beginning?
But you need to...
For
the Chinese market, it's not that different. I mean, you need to start with a vision, with a problem that you want to solve with technology, because technology for the sake of technology is just useless. I know people love to play with it.
So is it a landing page?
Yeah, it could be a landing page. I mean, it really depends. It's very difficult to answer that question.
Okay, sorry. It's because I have a very definitive answer in my head. And that's why I'm trying to
answer.
Just give it. No, because it's just my own opinion. That's all. Okay, well, tell you what. This is what I think, and then you tell me what I think. In the West, it kind of goes through landing page. You know, you're trying to get conversions, trying to get signups, trying to get email addresses, whatever, right? So you do a landing page, and then you build a website, and then you optimize it for mobile, and then you build an app, and so forth. But in China, it's kind of the reverse. When you're starting up, you kind of do a services subscription account on WeChat, and then you maybe do a WeChat account app, and then you maybe do an HTML5 app on WeChat, and then you might do a mobile site, and then or you might do a native app and then a mobile site, and then you might optimize your mobile site for web. It's almost reverse.
Now that I have your answer, I understand your question.
Sorry. Yeah.
You want to do something in China? Yeah. You don't even start with a service account or whatever. You start with a WeChat group, and you say, guys, I have this idea. And let's say you want to do service, like you want to do home delivery for whatever.
Yeah.
You know? You start a group with your friend and say, oh, I have that stuff to deliver, and this is the price, and hit me up, and I'll send my promotions on the group and on my moments, and you're set, and you can see if there is a demand in your friends, and you see, and all of a sudden your friends are invited. If there is a demand, then you see your friends inviting them to the group. So the lowest threshold is nothing, because a WeChat group, a personal group.
Yeah.
And then you have payments up there, so people can pay you via WeChat, and you get to hook them up there. You have no CRM, you have nothing, but you have them on your WeChat account.
Yep. Now you've got validation.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And then...
That's an MVP.
And then how do you grow from that really depends. I think you can live on that setup and that technology, which is not technology at all. Nobody wrote a single line of code in that scenario. Yeah. So it's not technology. It's a channel. It's a media channel, a social channel, a sales channel, all of that. And you send blurry picture of your products now.
Oh my gosh.
I know you like that one.
Oh God.
You complain about it.
I did. Socially.
And that's it. And I'm pretty sure there are people right now today in China who are making a living on that model. and they don't need more.
Okay, so
and they're okay as a single entrepreneur. You can do that.
There's a lot of people making a living on that. They're bringing over purses from wherever they go abroad, or they're doing something. Mm-hmm. I got a friend who they get friends and family to bring in just beer, cans of beer that we can't get here, and he gets people together. Just says, "Hey guys, we got 6 seats around our table. Anyone want to come in and drink some beer with us?" And you know, charge for the beer. It's amazing beer that you can't get in China, and we just hang out. And it proves basically that there's a demand for a bar that carries these kinds of beer that we can't get.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it on his own scale, mm-hmm. just in his free time. And he started with a WeChat group.
So now, does he have the bar now?
He has a little, it's literally a hole-in-the-wall bar that sits 6 people. Like, maybe a little more, 8 people.
So Todd is wrong. Yeah. There was no landing page, no app, nothing, no, you know?
It was a WeChat group.
That's amazing.
It's a WeChat group into...
So this is funny, though. Yeah. And did you just describe yourself out of a job?
Not yet. No. We don't work for... I mean, those people will never have the money and don't need our services.
True.
Working for bigger brands,
yeah.
Because it takes them, again, it will take them 5 years to figure out that model.
Yeah.
They are still trying to wrap their heads around what is WeChat, what they can do, and they're very, very cautious. Like, how do we get control of what, for which purpose? Mm-hmm. And the brief we receive, again, I won't name names.
No.
We need a WeChat account. For what? We don't know, but they don't worry for me.
I got okay. So I will not. Don't worry. You're good. Something else. So you kind of hit on something. I would like you to talk a little bit about B2B sales,
mm-hmm.
because you guys work with a lot of big brands and things like that. What's it like? You know, some education on how to effectively do B2B sales if you're, you know, kind of a software technology company in China.
Again, not sure this is completely different from other countries.
That's a great starting point anyway.
I think it's, as everywhere around the world, it's about trust. I mean, especially in services, when you don't have a product to show or you just have reference cases and examples of previous projects,
mm-hmm.
This is where you bring the trust, and you need to ask good questions to bring that trust. And mm-hmm. and somehow during the pre-sales process, the trust level is raising until the customer reaches a point where they say, okay, I'm willing to give you money to show me what you can do. Do a pilot for phase one, whatever, and once they see the result, then they're ready to buy more, and then we're in for hopefully a very long-term relationship of helping them with our services.
Speaking of having a long-term relationship, how do you manage that well? Like, how do you, because I know that it's not always easy. You're a fast-moving, lean, you know, kind of startup machine, and doing your thing. They are very much not. They could be very much a dinosaur, very archaic in the hierarchy of how things are and decision makers and things like that. Any hints or tips or tricks, or how do you effectively run those and get paid on time?
Oh, there are 2 questions in there.
Kind of. I threw the last one in at the very end.
So, I mean, it's dinosaurs, very big corporates with like procurement, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very difficult to get in.
But yes.
It's also difficult to get out. once you're in.
They can't get you out.
No, it's not just. I mean, to kick you out, they need to bring somebody in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of paperwork and why. And then who is going to take the risk of throwing away the good provider? Because we very much try to be the good provider and continue to deliver amazing service. That's how you keep any customer anyway.
Yeah.
Pay on time, depends. Big corporates usually once everything is set up and your payment terms are in place and your contract have been signed in time and everything is hunky-dory, paperwork goes through and then you have sign off from project manager and we're being paid. So for big corporates, it's not a big issue. For smaller companies, it can get a bit more difficult. And we sit down and we talk like adults and find solutions. Yeah.
Some different terms, some more upfront, some this, some that.
Yeah, and really, really bad customers, if they want to come back for the service, then it's in some term cases it could be up to 100% upfront. Take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's, I mean, you have to do that, but...
Being in China, yeah.
And to be honest, what you described doesn't sound any different than what it is outside China. And not, I expected it to be.
No, not much.
Yeah.
There's one additional step of the FAP, yeah, that's all.
Yes, the FAPIO. Yeah, you have to be a registered company to be able to issue a FAPIO and this kind of thing. That's true. Okay.
Yeah. That's all. Just one more piece of paper with red stamp. That's all.
Okay. How many staff? How many staff do you have?
60.
60.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about hiring and managing and keeping talent.
Hiring very, very difficult. And it seems like there is a huge pool of resources, but finding good people who ask for a reasonable salary and the right, the right mindset who will fit in the company culture is really, really hard.
Yeah.
Keeping them depends again the definition and the objective. Keeping them for 3-4 years, keeping them committed, engaged in projects, it's not that difficult as long as you show respect, you listen to them, you give them opportunities to learn what they want to learn, to take ownership for what they do, what they deliver, and a bit of career management, knowing at some point you have to kind of force people to move and say, okay, you've done that for 2 years, you feel really comfortable with it, but move before you get bored.
Yeah.
And usually they say, oh, no, I'm okay, but we have to push them a little bit. And that's how you move your average people staying in the company from 2 years to 4 years, by getting them to do 2 jobs. If we could get to do 3 jobs, move up a bit into management, we can get them longer.
Yeah.
So it's a mix of, again, respect, company culture, and proactive career management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Trying to, before people get to the lull. Even you're saying you're retaining people for 2 years, that's much longer than the average of Shanghai and tech.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's much, much longer. Like you're killing it then. And then if you're able to
keep
them 4 years.
So no tips or tricks, eh? Like you don't have like a special, you know, like you don't put any extra effort into the culture or, I mean, do you take them on retreats? Do you think do anything special? I mean, China, I'm sorry, but it is renowned for people having very little loyalty and moving around a lot. But you just sit here like,
everything's fine.
Yeah, very, just like that.
He's a popular guy. Everyone
likes
him.
But it's something stinks. That there's a secret sauce there somewhere.
No, it's like everything else.
Hong Bao.
It's not, I'll buy you, that's kind of given.
Chinese New Year, you just probably broke the bank.
No, it's okay. We have to provision for it.
And this is the time of year, really, you know, just after Chinese New Year when everybody switches jobs, right? I mean, or not everybody, yes, I'm embellishing, but this is traditionally
all of China.
You know, because that's when you get your, when you get your Chinese New Year bonus.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you've got your Chinese New Year bonus, and it was like, got my bonus, and then F you, I'm out. See ya.
For us, it's kind of the opposite. If we give an empty envelope, then they go out. They got a signal. If we give a full envelope, then they will stay.
Interesting.
But secret? No, there's no secret sauce. There's no magic trick. It's the hard work of building the company culture, caring for the people, and doing career management.
Do you stay on top of competitive wages?
I like that response.
I'm just trying to get something.
No, I like it. I think it speaks to a lot of the simplicity of really what it's at all. It's not rocket scientist. It's
science.
Not science, scientist, science. Yeah. You are just treating people with respect. You're, you know, doing things that are culturally relevant to them. Mm-hmm. You're treating them as they should be. You're giving them something that challenges them. Because I really don't think people work their hardest if you just dangle money in front of them. Mm-hmm. They work their hardest if you give them a challenge they're truly inspired and interested in. Mm-hmm.
That's bullshit.
No, it's not.
I'm just kidding.
It wouldn't work
just
for you.
Maybe to say that. I'm going to set up a camera in your office, Stefan. There's something going on there.
And a microphone.
There is something going on that I don't...
But another important point is to hire the right people.
Yeah.
If you hire too fast, I mean, if you hire too
very fill, true.
If you
very
hire too filling the seats and like, oh gosh, we have a project, we need 5 people, and you get the first 5 people you interview, they won't be a fit for the organization, and then they're gonna leave. And this is the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, they're gonna be like cancer, and they're gonna screw up.
Yeah,
exactly. And there is one trick.
There's one trick.
Just one tiny trick.
Okay.
You keep them busy.
Yeah.
Somebody busy all the time, they don't have time to look for another job.
Is there a difference? I mean, you worked in corporate before.
That's why Darren's nonstop working We keep Darren super busy.
Don't talk to him. He's busy. So you've been in the West, you've been in the East, so-called East, and you're in China. Management style, okay? Like, there's got to be a culture difference somewhere in this conversation. Something.
I'm just digging. I'm pretty happy with this.
Good. Just take a nap. you talked about tasking, okay? So, you know, I mean, what kind of different management style do you use here that you might not use in the West, because they're just not the same people.
Yeah, I think here the biggest difference will be the way the hierarchy works. Here you need a very, very clear hierarchy, chain of command. Mm. You need to be top down, okay? Mm-hmm. And you need to be strong. You need to be a true leader first.
Yeah.
Then once you've established that, so you can have a technical leadership, you can have a functional leadership, you can have there are different. It still allows for very, very different style of management, but you have to establish leadership and loyalty from the team. And once you have that, you can open up for a bit of bottom up feedback and suggestions and what can we do better, etc., etc. Versus in the West, at least in Europe and especially in France, no matter where you go, I mean, people will give their advice and they won't wait for a new manager to come in and really settle down and organize things. You'll get riots and discussion and debates, and people will push back, etc., etc. Yeah. Versus here, I mean, the first thing people will do with a new manager, they'll follow up orders, see where it goes. Is that guy crashing? Is it doing a good job? And then you start to create that relationship, and then it can go both ways. But first of all, you have to establish a very, very clear chain of command, which is somehow very relaxing for a manager, because they don't get pushback too much.
Yeah.
And then once this is in place, a bit more open and flexible.
You know? Yeah, I think in the West, respect is earned. I think in the East, it's given right away, because that's the way it should be. But then it's not static whatsoever.
You can lose it very quickly.
You can lose it right away. But they will just like, okay, so you're my new boss. I accept that. And, you know, I will do something. But they're watching you very close. And you can either gain it and have it for a very long time, or you can lose it very quickly.
But right off the bat,
they'll give it to you. But I totally agree with the strength comment as well. You know, it's not typically, you know, a country where you can sit in the same common, you know, workspace with everybody. You kind of have to, if you're the boss, you have to sit in the boss's office and, you know, have some leather furniture and some, you know, rich mahogany books. There's a thing there. It's slowly fading. Have you gotten away with being able to sit out with everybody else, or do you have to sit in an office behind a door?
I have my own office right now since we moved office, but there's an open door, and I try to talk to people, but again, not breaking the chain of command.
Yeah,
be very, very respectful to the manager, to middle management, and never go behind their back, and always make sure that if whatever is coming, if I discuss with a developer or consultants, like, oh, you should talk to your manager about
that. Yeah,
you
know? It is not flat.
No, not at all.
Yeah, not at all. But I am seeing, for a lot of the startups we see coming through here, I think that it's there's a bit of a change coming, because I see a lot of the CEOs and the founders of the startup companies that have a larger staff of maybe 6 or 8. They're right in the throes
they're actually doing
pretty good. Yeah, they see this as now a new thing to show respect to their. Yeah.
How much percentage of the workforce is that?
Yeah, small.
Small.
Compared to the overall China and all the factories and government offices.
Ridiculously. It's huge. That's probably not a fair thing to say.
Such
a small, tiny percentage. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Stefan, thank you very much, buddy. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much. This was a great talk.
Yeah.
There we go. Shaking the hands.
So a little bit of a self-plug here for System in Motion. You know, tell us, people need your services. How do we get in touch with you? How do they find you?
Best way is probably start with LinkedIn.
Okay.
So I guess my name, especially the spelling, which is very, very Stefan peculiar. Yeah.
Montsalier.
Two L's, no T.
Yeah, let me try this. Stephane Monsalier.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So LinkedIn, and then from there on, I'll handle it.
Yeah, Stephane Monsalier, System in Motion. Check him out on LinkedIn and get in touch. Great having you on the show. Very successful entrepreneur and has been working really, really hard. Thank you for all your mentorship years that you put in at China Accelerator and all the work that you put into the workshops. Definitely one of the probably the top 5 or 10 engaged mentors that we've ever had with China Accelerator. So thank you so, so very much.
Bye.
Okay. Thank you, listeners. Love you guys.
Thanks, guys. Hey, guys, before we go, I just want to give you guys a way to contact Andrew Collins. So Andrew can be contacted at andrew@mailmangroup.com, or you can hit him up on Twitter at AC Mailman.
I'm guessing the AC stands for Andrew Collins.
It might be AC Milan. You never know.
Oh, I never thought about that.
He's a fan.
Because that's dumb.
It's
definitely Andrew Collins. So AC Mailman at AC Mailman. Yes. And for those of you who want to get on that KWO platform, you guys got to go. You got to check it out. What is it? KWO.com/startup.
Yep. KWO.com/startup.
That's such a cool thing. I'm so happy. So it's definitely so get in touch. Give him a shout out. Give him a tweet. Send out something.
Yeah. Say thank you. Let them know that you're out there using it. Tell them thanks for that. And also, I want to give a personal shout out to Sean, one of our listeners who contacted me.
Sean
gave me some awesome feedback, some really supportive ideas, and he's actually thinking of doing his own podcast.
Kind of helped him do it.
Mm-hmm. I think he should do it. It's awesome. Keep it going. So thanks so much, Sean, for reaching out.
Yeah. So how do other people get in touch with us?
So you guys can all get in touch with us by emailing us at team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, we haven't said that enough. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue yet.
team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, what about social media? We got anything yet?
Darren, do we have anything yet?
No, we don't.
Did we set up Twitter?
Lame. Email us then. Email us
right now.
Yeah, and we're going to kick Darren's butt all over the place this week to make sure that stuff's set up.
It's all actually my fault, but what's another story?
I didn't want to say, but yes, it is.
Actually all my fault.
But all right, cool.
Learn that next time.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.